Listening to Formosa Files. My name is Nancy Chin Baldwin. I was 5 years old when I was sold.
Formosa Files.
The Taiwan History Podcast, Formosa Files, is made possible through the generous sponsorship of the Frank C. Chen Foundation.
The woman I was sold to was a bar girl. You know, in the Western world, we always think of them as sex workers.
Let's just start out for some people who aren't possibly aware of the cultural background that giving a child or selling a child has. I mean, this continued in Taiwan until probably, I don't know, maybe even into the 70s. You know, now today, if you wanted to adopt a kid, you have to go down and get the records changed and, you know, do it properly. And there's authorities. But back in the day, it was very different. Families would like sometimes exchange, you know, I have an extra girl, or but then also, like in your case, there was just straight up selling.
So in the 1950s and 60s, you know, I guess if people who don't know about it is, you know, the Taiwan was in such a transition period, right? I mean, that was just like the end of World War II. And there was a huge building boom because the American dollars pouring into the island. And so a lot of development was going on. So a lot of farmers came from the mountainsides and rural area to the city to work and so forth. At that time, you know, in a farm, a lot of girls, young girls, you know, and even young boys too, you know, in according to the way the culture was, is that if an uncle cannot have any children, then, you know, you give them one of your child. It's still in the family, but you give them away and they change their name and they will go to the other family, but they still stay in the family. Now, there were a lot of cases where the family are too poor to feed the girl, let's say, and they would sometimes just give it away. Say, well, I can't really afford to feed my daughter. Would you please take her? And there were cases of young girl, you know, being sold to brothels. You know, I mean, that at that time, I mean, there's so many things going on and prostitution was kind of, you know, legal. So a lot of girls, young girls, got sold into brothels. And, you know, in my case, I guess I was pretty lucky, right? I was sold to a single working woman. So that's kind of how it was. It just was that period of time. The family were poor. I mean, really, Taiwan, if you can picture it with all the old pictures, Taiwan at that time was pretty poor.
Exactly. The visceral reaction from a lot of Westerners to the idea of selling a child is like, oh my God, how could you possibly do that? But what is not understood is the level of poverty at that time.
Right. And it just the way it was, you know, and if you, again, if you're not familiar with that period of time in Taiwan, the educational system was not very good. There was a shortage of school. You know, the Japanese went home. I mean, most of the people went to school had to learn Japanese rather than Mandarin, right? So the whole educational level was so poor because there wasn't enough school for everybody. So just imagine you have no education, no specific skills. And, you know, how do you go about supporting your family, right? I mean, even the young boys was very, very difficult for them to find a job in a city. You know, most of the work was in construction, and the construction did not earn that much money. So what do you do with young girls, especially beautiful girls, when you can earn U.S. dollars? You know, like my mother bought me for 100 U.S. dollar at the time. That was a lot of money in 1955, right? I mean, you can buy houses with that money.
You said $100 could buy a house?
Well, that's what my family claimed, you know, that they could use the money to buy an apartment house. But I don't know for sure.
There is one part of your story, however, that does strike me as cruel. And that would be your grandmother was the one who gave a loan to your parents. Your parents are already extremely, this is your birth parents. They're already very, very poor. They get a loan from your grandma, and the grandmother is pushing them to sell you so that she can get repaid.
Well, you know, culturally, there was kind of unspoken, you know, accept the rule at the time, because if you're a girl, you know, during that period of time, the girls don't, you know, did not really have the right. And the only reason why I was able to stay with my birth parents for 5 years was because I was the only child for three years, you know. So, I mean, they have a child just in case, you know, we can't have any children, you know, she can stay home to take care of us kind of thing. I don't know if that's the truth or not, but, and then my brother was born, right? My brother, Alan and I were 2 years apart. So as soon as there's a boy in a house, there's really no need anymore for me to be around. From my grandmother's perspective, is just an extra mouth to feed, right? At that time, a female child was not really valued. And I think what was really struck me, and it took me a long, long time to figure out how to forgive, was that my grandmother was not poor. I mean, they were landowners. They own all this land up there, still in Sherman area. And they leased land to poor farmers like my father's family to go to farm. So it wasn't because they were poor, they didn't have many money, that they want their money back. I think it's just a matter of culturally that female child demean awful lot, especially when you have boys in the family. I'm sorry, I never really had a chance to really confront them or see them because they passed away before I even have an opportunity to get to talk to them or know them. And the other thing that I did not put in the book, you know, which I was told, was that my father took responsibility for me being sold because he felt that he had to preserve the family face, you know, the honor. And he did not want my grandmother to be blamed. Right. So he took the full responsibility of being the one who sold me. And, you know, I didn't know anything about that until like 3-4 years ago when I was talking to my mother.
Interesting. So John and I in this podcast, we're constantly discovering that you really can't be judgmental of people in the past because you can't put yourself in their shoes. It's just not possible. You know, you weren't there. You can't ever be there. When you go back, just not even that far, it's a whole different world.
Correct. I think that's really correct. And I think that's why I wrote the book the way I wrote it, was because that, you know, exactly. I mean, you go through a lot of pain. I mean, I have to say, it was a painful journey for me when I was young, you know, because you always get into this thing about self-worth issue, right? And I would say it wasn't really that pleasant. It was pretty painful. But at the end of the day, I have to say, wow, you know, I'm glad that that happened to me the way it happened. Otherwise, I would not be who I am today.
And you also went on to have a 40-year career in the U.S. aerospace industry.
Yes.
That's some high-tech stuff.
Well, I have to tell you, that was quite an experience, right? Can you imagine? I'm 5'3", right? A little girl, and I don't wear high heels, right? Can you just imagine this, Eric? So I went to college, and it like, was the top 5% of the class, and da-da-da-da-da. And I work in, you know, Air Force Base, you know, as a civilian, as a financial analyst. And I was wearing miniskirts because nobody ever taught me how to be a professional, right? So I was like wearing the clothes of miniskirt like I was in college, you know. So that was quite experience about how that was in a very male-dominated office in the base, you know. But that itself was also a great, great experience because I learned quite a lot about that, about relationship, about how I present myself. And with a broken, you know, English, oh my gosh, the foreign-born Asian woman. You know, today in Taiwan, a lot of young women and a lot of young people in general, you know, they are so fearful. And, you know, the experience, my childhood experience have taught me not to be afraid, you know. I mean, once you know, I mean, either you're going to live or you're going to die. And then dying is very easy, you know, you're gone. Nobody's going to remember you after a while. But if you want to live, you know, you can't just hide behind anything. So for me, it was not being fearful, just taking risks, just go for it. What's the worst case? What could any worse than happen to me happen again, you know? So I always feel like I want to share that part of experience with the young people and young girls and say, never be afraid. Always just go out and take risk, you know, just go for it.
So just to be clear for people who are listening, you were not sold into prostitution. You were sold to a woman. Her name was Grace. She was a freelance bar girl, which you could say is a sex worker, or...
I call her as a substitute wife, because that's the terminology I came up with.
And so the idea was maybe that you would care for her when she was in her old age.
I think that was her purpose of buying me to take care of her at her old age, yes. Grace and I never really talk about her life. I gather all this information from other members of the family. It was always very difficult for Grace to talk about her personal experience, except that she would scold me for being not loyal to her and betray her and, you know, all the...
Well, she was obviously projecting some of her insecurities onto you, I would argue.
And anger. I think that she lives a very anguished life. And I think toward the end of her life, the last past 5 years, you know, I really took care of her. I mean, but every time when I want to talk to her about her experience, it was just very difficult for her to even, you know, acknowledge. So I just kind of let that go. And can you imagine when you have a relationship with all these different men? That's why she couldn't have any children, because she had problems, you know, with her reproductive systems and stuff. There was never any VDs or anything, because I don't know if the, you know, listeners know about this, but during that period of time, the government policy in Taiwan, they require that anybody who works in the licensed bar also has to be licensed. And they had to go in and have a medical examination for VD on a regular basis, you know. Otherwise, you cannot work in a bar. So I do kind of know that, yeah.
These men, they're working for the U.S. military in some capacity, and they're looking for someone who's more of like a maternal, perhaps is not the right word, but yeah, you know, they're going to take care of you, wash your clothes, cook for you, act as a wife / mommy in a way, if that's fair.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that was the whole concept. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I think they probably stayed together for a few months, you know, 3-4 months. Yeah.
And so you spent 9 years in Taiwan with Grace, and then she married an American and you moved with her to the United States. How did it work? Passports and legal documents and all of that. Like, how were you legalized?
Okay, so during that period of time, corruption. Taiwan, the corruption is amazing. If you have money, you can buy anything, right? So Grace was a pretty smart woman. I mean, she was very street smart, you know. I mean, she wasn't educated, but she was really, really smart. And I think she bought all the legal papers. And then immediately she got green card and I got green card, you know. So I'm sure that, at that time, the corruption is widespread. You can, as long as you have the money, you can buy anything.
Well, we're not going to tell too many of the details of your book, but I'm definitely going to put a link up on the website. The name of your book is 1,000 Layers of Water and Clouds, A Tale of a Taiwanese Daughter by Nancy Chen Baldwin. And that title relates to your name. Your original Chinese name has both the term for water, shui, and yun, for clouds. So people should definitely go out and search for that book on Amazon and grab it. It's a very unique description of a life and a time of Taiwan that was very important, but also very turbulent. But before we go, the other interesting thing for me really was the forgiveness aspect of it, or the understanding aspect. Not only that, but you say that you came to view Grace, the person who bought you, as a hero or heroine, if you prefer that, because she was doing what she needed to do to support her family, her extended family probably, or, you know, friends, relatives and all that. And I mean, wow. So many situations in history like this, where people did the hard thing.
Yes, that's why I dedicated this book to her. because I mean, you know, she sacrificed herself and she never really ever complained. I mean, she knew what she had to do to support her mother and two brothers and me, and she just marched on and do whatever she needed to go do.
And that takes me also to the topic of your birth parents, because it can't have been easy to see them again the first time.
Yes, it was 21 years later. That was the first time that I saw them in Taiwan. And it was like almost numb because I didn't know what to do with that. My emotion was so locked up that I did not really offer any connection. You know, I mean, just went through the mechanic, having dinner with them, you know, and get to know my brothers and sister. But there was no emotional connection, and I was just like a numb. And when I came back to the United States, I actually threw away everything. I threw away their contact information, their addresses, their pictures. I just threw away everything in a garbage can because at that time, I was just so angry. Maybe it was more hurt than anything else. And emotionally, I was not quite there. So I just decided I was going to cut all tie with them.
Would you use the word forgiveness, or how would you describe the relationship that eventually developed?
I think being a mother myself, I have two children, and I, you know, can learn how to appreciate, you know, my maternal instinct and how that was. And I feel like my mother probably missed out a lot. And we have a big family, you know, we had a total of 8 of us, right? I really did not like my birth mother too much. And then it was about 6 years ago that after I retired and we were going to Taiwan for vacation with my daughter. And that's when I found my birth parents and my birth family again. And the time, you know, it's kind of emotional. It was very, very awkward. You know, like my brothers and sisters, you know, they're very close. My 7 other brothers and sisters, even though my older sister was given away at 6 months old to another uncle, but she was always running away and coming home. So she wasn't really kind of separated too much. But I was the only one, and I, you know, that never was part of that whole family structure. So it was very, very awkward in a way that they have curiosity toward me, like, why are you here? Why all this year here? We told you to connect with us, you know, when you were 26 years old and you elected not to do that. So why now? You know, why now? Why are you coming home for inheritance or whatever? And so there was a lot of that hard feeling on my brothers and sisters' side. And for me, it was like, I can't connect with these people because they can't understand the way I think. So during the last year was like trying to get to know each other. You know, it's almost like I'm trying to teach them how to be an American, and they're trying to teach me how to be a Taiwanese again, that kind of thing. So it wasn't until like 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, where my birth mother was dying, and it was COVID. You know, so I kind of got stuck in Taiwan. So that was the time I felt like it was necessary for me to confront my mother, because my feeling toward her was so intense, full of hurts and anger. And I felt like I had to get that out, because with grace, I made peace with her. So when she died, we had no regret. We connected just like a mother and mother and daughter. I was able to take care of her for the last 5 years of her life. But with my birth mother, it was very, very difficult for me. You know, I mean, with myself being a mother, and I always wonder, like, how could you? How could you?
Exactly.
Give me away, not only give me away, you allow my grandmother to sell me like a piece of property. You know, I mean, psychologically, that was a very, very difficult thing for a Westerner to think about. And of course, I'm more Westerner than Taiwanese at the time. So I'm thinking, like, how could you do that? So it was about 2.5 years ago, I finally confront her. It was very difficult for her to talk about it. My birth mother was a pretty tough woman. I mean, with 8 kids, you know, with 7 kids that she has raised, and my father was like, you know, typical Taiwanese man. When you're wealthy, you have mistresses and, you know, women and playing around and stuff. And my mother has to go and take care of the 7 kids. So she was a tough woman, really, really tough woman. And so it's hard for her to admit to me that I'm sorry, just to say, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry that we had to do what we did. And finally, 2.5 years ago, she broke down and she said she was sorry. And that's where I think we connected. And then the whole world just kind of opened up for me. And I start kind of thinking about my mother, even though she wasn't a substitute wife or being a sex worker or anything like that. But she also have her own story that she had to deal with. You know, what's really interesting, Eric, I have to say about my mother, you know, I mean, and I think it's pretty true in the Taiwanese culture as well. In most cases, as you know, the Taiwanese, you know, not very emotional people. So it's very difficult for my mother to really express, right, how she really felt until I pressed it, you know, I pressed the issue. And for her to be so brave and finally broke down to talk about her own experience, you know, because she said she was also given away, but she ran away and come home. It wasn't very long before, you know, that she ran away and come home. So culturally, it just, that's the way it was, you know, and I kind of came to understand a lot more about that's the way it was, that period of time. And there's nothing that I need to really take grudges or anything, you know. It just somehow come naturally, the forgiveness, the embrace, you know. And then she was very, very sick. So I was able to help my little brother because she lived with my little brother with Waila, you know, the help, Indonesian women to help. But I was there to see her almost every week and try to massage and bring food and, you know, and I would just sit there with her and then, you know, sometimes push her wheelchair into the park and stuff. So I make a lot of effort to do that in a way is almost forgiving myself for sort of hating her for all these years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, we only told a very brief portion of your entire story. And again, the book is 1,000 Layers of Water and Clouds, The Tale of a Taiwanese Daughter by Nancy Chen Baldwin, available online. And Mrs. Baldwin, I just want to say thank you for talking to Formosa Files.
And thank you very much, Eric. I really appreciate this. And I hope your listeners enjoy this talk and would have an opportunity to go and read the book. Perhaps they'll find out more about our cultures and our histories. And I think that would be really great, and I'll be grateful.
Absolutely. 谢谢.